This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. On one summer day in 2004, hundreds of American women from across the U.S. and in 14 other countries wrote down their thoughts and activities for that single day. Women of all ages, ethnicities, and walks of life took part. Today, we'll hear some of what they had to say. Joni Cole is our guest. She is one of the editors of This Day in the Life, Diaries from Women Across America. This is the second book of its kind. The first volume, This Day, Diaries from American Women, was published in 2003. That collection of diary entries was so successful that the editors, Joni Cole, Rebecca Joffrey, and B.K. Rockra, decided to seek contributions from a new group of women. 493 women responded. They included a folk musician, a resettled refugee, journalists, and a wedding planner. But you know, these descriptions give us only the slightest hint of who participated in this day in the life. These women are also mothers and wives and activists. Let me share with you the first entry in the book. It is 1:09 a.m. in the life of Amanda Lamb. She's 38 years old, a television journalist. Crime is her beat. She's a wife and mother. Amanda and her husband have two daughters, Chloe and Mallory. I hear the baby Chloe flailing around in the playpen, the rustling of sheets, the rattling of toys, the heavy pacifier sucking noise. She reminds me of a live fish still hooked on the deck of a boat as she arches her back and wiggles on the thin mattress. In my sleepy fog, her sheets sound like someone crumpling wads of crisp newspaper. I do not usually sleep in the same room with my daughter, but we are on vacation. Vacation is a funny word for what this is, two endless weeks with children in constant, close, needy proximity. And now here's the day's final entry. I always plan to go to bed early. It never happens. Life gets in the way. But that's okay. Another full day, another full night, likely to be followed by more of the same the next day. I wouldn't have it any other way. Amanda Lamb, 1:09 a.m. and 11:30 p.m. on vacation at the beach. It was a long but good day. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments this afternoon for our guest, Joni Cole. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Joni Cole, it's good to talk with you again.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Well, let's go back to 2003 and the first collection of diary entries. What inspired you to ask women to keep a diary for a day, send it to you, then edit and publish the contributions?
Well, Celeste, it was a classic case, I think, of a very bad day leading to a good idea. I'd been having a lousy day that day. There'd been a sickness in my family, and it was terrible weather outside, even though it was April. And we just got hit with a tax bill. And on top of that, I'd had a fight with my four-year-old daughter over socks. She didn't want to wear any on this sleety day. And so I just got to thinking nobody else is having this kind of bad day. And from that thought and that self-pity party that I was having, I thought, what are other women really doing? What is a day in their life like compared to my own? And so a book was born out of curiosity and definitely wallowing in self-pity, but also a real need to connect, I think.
Yeah. How did you find the women to participate in these two books now?
Well, it started, this book is such a luxury for me and my two partners, Bindi Rockra and Becky Joffrey, because it starts with our wish list. Whose day are we really nosy or really curious about? And so for the first book, I know I was just intrigued. What in the world does a funeral parlor director do? How can you be a funeral parlor director or Miss America? And so, of course, I picked up the phone and called them. For this current book, I just had this thing about rodeo riders, and certainly also given the timing of the book, I really wanted to know what a day in the life of soldiers at war was like. So it starts with our wish list, but then very quickly we need, for the book to be successful, to really reach across socioeconomic and experiential and cultural boundaries. And so to that end, we enlisted the help of just dozens of other people and organizations, from the American Association of Zookeepers to the Illinois Migrant Council to Women on Wheels, and, you know, just on and on. And so we recruited women from every state, from all different walks of life, and we got a ton of help in doing so.
Yeah. After this project was on its way to the publisher both times, how did the women who contributed feel about it? What have you heard back from these women?
Yes, we have, from lots and lots of them, and thankfully so, because, you know, that's not my perspective, and so I'm really grateful when I can hear, what was this like? Did you get some real value out of this? And so we hear back that in and of itself, keeping a day diary, which is just a one-day exercise, which is what they do for the book, they chronicle what they're doing on this day that we chose and what they're thinking and feeling as well. And just that exercise alone, that one-day commitment, is very revelatory. And thankfully, the women got a lot of personal rewards because of that. It really lets you take stock. You know, beyond that, too, it's fun to maybe be published. It's fun, with or without publication, to do this as a community of women. I mean, at this point, over, you know, 1,000 women participated in these two books. And to think that other women from, you know, women in nursing home residents to celebrities are at the same time chronicling a day in their life when you are, they found that really rewarding to be part of that community. So luckily they got a lot out of the book project.
Yeah, I wonder how many continue on keeping a diary after this exercise.
Yeah, well, a lot of them report back that they do, but the funny little secret about this is to keep a day diary, it's exhausting. And so it really is meant to be a one-day thing and then to do it intermittently because you're chronicling really moment by moment almost your thoughts and feelings. And so, and yet you have to continue to live your life. You know, these people are work as astronauts or, you know, brothel madams or nurses or teachers. Or and so, you know, it's a 24-hour commitment that's very engaging. Also exhausting. By the end of the day, you're ready for it to be over.
What are some of the ways that women ended their days, by the way?
Well, I love the example that you shared of Amanda Lambs.
Yeah.
So that was great. Just all sorts of days. You know, some, of course, were just like had days from heck and, you know, passed out early in the evening. Others, the day just seemed on and on and on. I like at the end of the book, we have this roundup of dozens and dozens of voices, and it almost takes you through, you know, hour by hour what different women are doing, and you get this amazing diversity of activities. But, you know, some of them are starting out at the end of the day ready to party. Some of them, you know, are just trying to hunker on down and get away from their kids. And I love one of the last entries where this woman gets a knock on her door, and it's her teenage son saying, hey, did you know the premiere of Spider-Man is coming up in 23 hours and 59 minutes? And so it's just a real fun diversity of how they both start and end their day.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Joni Cole is our guest this afternoon here on the program. She's one of the editors of This Day in the Life, Diaries from Women Across America, 24 hours of true life stories. If you'd like to join us this afternoon, join the conversation, feel free. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9. I think our transmitter hiccuped there for a moment. So the toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. So did you ask the women every hour to write something, or how did you suggest that they take on this responsibility?
Yeah, it's an individual kind of thing. We certainly wanted some kind of chronicling throughout the day. That gives it an immediacy and, frankly, an intimacy, too, that you don't quite get at the end of the day when you're going back and reflecting. You're putting down your thoughts and feelings as they're occurring to you. So you're going to get some really honest and also laugh-out-loud funny kind of thoughts in there. But beyond that, some people really had a lot of entries with different time components attached to them. Others did a little bit more, you know, 2 hours would pass and then they'd reflect on what happened in those past 2 hours. Or they were, frankly, at a meeting where they just couldn't, you know, chronicle their time. But it is remarkable, and I still have no idea how they did it, how some of them captured, not moment by moment per se, but truly throughout the day, what they were doing and thinking and feeling in a way that's startling, how they could both be doing what they were doing and yet at the same time capturing it in such a compelling way. But they did it. It's amazing.
What was the day you selected for this day in the life?
This was June 29th, 2004. So it was a summer day, getting ready for July 4th a little bit. A lot of kids, of course, were off school for the summer. Women were on vacations. Women were at work. It was a fun day. It was also the day when we woke up to the headlines that the United States government had just turned over sovereignty to the Iraqis. So that, of course, was featured in a lot of people's diaries, the reaction to that. And, of course, it impacted the soldiers that were serving in Iraq at the time, too.
Yeah, I was struck by the number of times September 11th came up in one way or another.
Oh, it's just startling, of course. But then why not? How much it still resonates. And, of course, with the war going on, that's got to, you know, also make it even more close to home still. And and of course, with the book before this that came out in 2003, it was even more prevalent.
Yeah, yeah. Well, overall, what kind of a day did the diarist have on June 29th, 2004?
It's hard to summarize because of this range of participants from, you know, 91-year-old nun to Roseanne Cash to, you know, women just starting their first real day jobs to, you know, moms of four, you know, at home with the kids. But if there's any theme, I guess we're very busy. Stress, multitasking, needing more hours in a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
I'd say that was a theme that came out a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that comprise women's work also, I think, is something that came through loud and clear to me. And, you know, go back to that old saw, woman's work is never done.
Oh, yeah.
Talk with us about the 90-year-old nun. What did she include in her day diary?
Oh, I just loved her diary. Her name is Dorothy Ann Cahill, and she lives in a convent. She works as a almost like a goodwill ambassador in the halls of Holy Cross Hospital in Maryland, where she worked. And her day was quiet in one sense. She talks about the endless road construction that's going on her way to work. She talks about issues. She recently had to give up her license, and that's the greatest burden that she's had to bear in terms of getting older. She is on the job part of the time, and so she talks about her work. But on the other hand, her boss is out that day. And since her boss is usually who originates some of the work that Dorothy does, she played a lot of computer solitaire on the computer that day because, you know, she didn't have that much to do. And, of course, she talked about her relationship to God, and we could see through the way she showed it in her day diary how important this relationship was to her, how big of a factor it was in her day. And it was just a lovely diary, but the most surprising thing about it is it's laugh-out-loud funny.
Yeah.
And it's just so sweetly humorous.
Did she write about how she prayed and what she put in her messages to?
Yes, she talks about how, for, of course, this special day, she prayed for the other 490-some diarists. She prayed that she'd have something important to say in her day diary. And then, of course, she prayed for peace in the world. And at the end of her prayers, she threw in that she also prayed that she'd be able to keep her hearing and her teeth and her senses until whatever time she had left on earth. So you can see these are sincere prayers.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it's just the way she thinks. She's got a funny sense of humor. But and it just also, I think, was reflected in the diary how much this is a part of her day. This isn't an afterthought. This is the fabric of her day, that she gets up at 5 and has this quiet time and prays, that it's, you know, later in the day she comes back to this. And it was a lovely demonstration of faith.
Hmm. You also mentioned Roseanne Cash.
Yeah.
What's a day like in her life?
She was at home with her kids. She's got 2 at home still, but she has 5 children. So in one sense, it was a very typical day in the life of a at-home mom when the kids are on vacation. So with that goes along, of course, that they got on her nerves a little bit. They soaked the mail that day with the hose. They were running around. They were sunbathing. But unlike my day, perhaps, or other at-home mom's days, she also went through her email, for example, 2,200 emails, most of them requests for celebrity auctions or condolences for her father, Johnny Cash, who had died 10 months earlier. And, you know, her relationship with her father was very close, and she's still grieving very much during this period and on this day. And so the condolences were meaningful to her, and she even wakes up that morning reading Psalms aloud to her father, which is a habit she had gotten into, obviously, when he was alive, and she continues, even though he's dead now. It makes her feel a little more connected to him.
Yeah. What did women have to write about in terms of relationships with parents, mothers, and fathers?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues that emerged in terms of, you know, American culture and what's going on now is this issue of women caring for their aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
We had every type of relationship, parental relationship, reflected, I think, in this book. But I was startled by how many women are caring for their aging parents, whether they're in a nursing home or whether they're still in their own homes. This was a big, big part of the day. And you can just imagine, we've heard about this and read headlines and know that I think the main caretaker for elderly parents or parents that are becoming a little more infirm as a woman, age 46, but to see it reflected and how many hours of a day it consumes and the emotional toll and emotional rewards that are involved in caring for a parent who has needs is, it's just striking. We had some day diaries that very much centered on this because the day centers on this sometimes, and I found them the most moving and the most compelling. And you know, it's clear that this is a big issue in our culture, and this is something where women, everyone, needs a little bit more help, I think.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me also is the number of women who called a mother or a father during the course of the day or emailed them.
Yeah. I think I'm not looking at the statistic right now, but we had a few collective glimpses, statistics that we put in the book, did you or did you not do something on your day? And we had asked the women, did you talk to your mother that day? And I'm not looking at the statistic, but I think about
31%.
31%. Yeah. How many enjoy the conversation?
Like, over 80%.
Yeah.
Good news.
Yeah, good news. So there's a real, obviously, connection between women and their mothers and their daughters, of course. And yeah, so, but, you know, they had something to say, obviously, about their relationships with their mothers, their fathers, their kids, their husbands, you know, their boyfriends. So there's a lot of insight into relationships and gender in this book.
Yeah. Well, we've mentioned a couple of older women now and women who are taking care of their parents who are older. I wanted to share an entry from a 22-year-old woman from Lake Zurich, Illinois. She's a grad student, and she's trying to make dinner. Joni, it's on page 80 if you've got the book there.
I got a
charge out of this one. 6:45 p.m., consider making hamburger helper. Realize meat still frozen. Send instant message, I am, to my friend Mike asking how to defrost. Should I remove it from the container? Should I watch it cook in the microwave? Should I turn it over? I put up an away message. If you smell something burning, please check up on me in apartment 3. After 7 minutes of defrosting, ooh. That's my comment. I spread the meat apart. Notice it's not bright red in the center. Get paranoid, and I am Mike again. He decides it's better to be safe than sorry and suggests dumping it. I put up another away message. I'm not made to be a housewife. Not wanting to waste food, I call home. I know if Dad answers, the meat would be okay. If Mom answers, the meat would be poisonous. Dad answers. So I continue cooking. Linda Zito, 22, Lake Zurich.
I love that entry, obviously, or it wouldn't be in the book. I think it's those nuances of relationships, those realities that are so universal that can only be captured in a book like this. It kind of looks at the moment-to-moment perspective, and that Linda captured that reality, you know, that Mom has different standards in terms of toxic food poisoning than Dad does. It just cracks me up.
Yeah. Well, who's the youngest diarist and who's the oldest?
We had 21-year-old diarists, so they would be the youngest. And women in their 90s, you know, I'm thinking Dorothy Ann Cahill is 91, but she was not by any means the only woman in her late 80s or 90s that participated in the book. So it might be Dorothy, but we might have a few more people in their 90s, too. We, like I said, one of the main goals of you know, the book was to be inclusive. So we tried to reach people in very many different life experiences. And so we did go to nursing homes, for example, and made sure to invite lots and lots of women from there. But, yeah, so there's a big, big age range in here.
Another one of the entries that I enjoyed reading very much comes under the heading When Love Comes Full Circle. And this is the story of Connie Linnell Ambrose Gates, who's 79 years old, and she lives in New Hampshire. What's her story?
Well, Connie's great. She's been a caretaker most of her life, but the lovely part of her story was that she had lost her husband when she was in her 60s, I think, and she happened to go to her high school reunion all these decades later. And who did she meet there but her high school sweetheart? And this might have been about 10 years ago or so, and they fell in love and they got married again. And so when she writes this day diary, you know, she's with her husband, this high school sweetheart of hers, but he had fallen ill a few years ago with diabetes and needs to be on dialysis. And the thing that was striking particularly about Connie's day is, of course, she's helping her husband get ready to go on to the trip for dialysis. But this was one of the few days where she actually had a few hours to herself. And it was just striking at age 79 how the demands on this woman. And yet, equally striking was how upbeat and positive and absolutely loving she is. It's a joy to read that day diary. She's an inspiration.
And she has her own health issues. You know, she's getting older and things aren't working like they used to. But yet she says it's a neat fairy tale, and fairy tales do come true, this about meeting her husband, Sonny, her long-ago sweetheart.
Yeah, it's funny. And, of course, her mother would never have approved of her marrying Sonny way back when. You know, but here they are. They've been married, or are married, I think, 18 years now. And it's a fairy tale love story. It's funny because I've gotten to know some of the diarists, including Connie, just via the phone or more emails. But friendships have developed, and it always takes me aback, even though, of course, I've known Connie now for a while through her day diary, that she's 79 years old because of the responsibility she has, the energy she has, the humor she has, the optimism that she has. And so it's a perfect example of one of the themes of the book is that it's intended to help us overcome these misconceptions we have about women, either because of their jobs or their ages or whatever. And, you know, Connie, speaks volumes about what does it really mean to be 79.
Yeah, and also, you know, the changes we see in the course of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, absolutely.
And her mother didn't approve of Sonny, so that kind of left that off. But yet her first husband was a man she fell in love with. They married and had a family. And then when he died, Sonny comes along. So rather than having regrets, this woman is perfectly happy with her life and the twists and turns that it's taken.
Yeah.
Even though there have been moments where, you know, there was grieving and great sadness.
Yeah. She speaks again to another theme of the book. We get so many comments about Connie's diary, and what's interesting is, you know, she is 79. She lives in Northwood, New Hampshire. She does not work outside the home. There is nothing externally fascinating, the type of person you would say, oh, this would make a great day diary. Yet I cannot tell you how many people feel this diary is one of the ones that touches them the most. But what she speaks so eloquently of is you can see that, yes, her life has had a lot of twists and turns, but there is an attitude that clearly is just a part of Connie that comes through in almost every entry that is both positive, appreciative of what she has, and it really speaks to the reality. The women whose day diaries reflected that upbeat, that positive attitude, are clearly the women who seem to me to be the happiest, regardless of the struggles or the realities of their lives. And yeah. Connie perfectly exemplifies that.
A lot of complexity here in these women's lives, and a lot of variety as well. And one of the things I'd like you to talk about is something that you write about in the introduction.
Okay.
You know, you and your co-editors wrote, "We are all burdened with so much ridiculous divisiveness, most of it grounded in false assumptions." What can we learn about the assumptions that we make day to day from the writings in this collection of day diaries?
Well, I think, you know, on a just a day to day innocent level, we harbor misconceptions about other people, other women, that are so wrong, and yet we don't know it. I can give an example. I mean, I do this all the time. From the book, I had to one of the featured diarists is a NASA astronaut, and she's also a colonel in the Air Force, and I, of course, knew that this was going to be a really hard interview. She was going to be a snob. I wouldn't have anything to talk with her about. I was going to feel so intimidated, and I worked myself up into such a frenzy before this interview. I didn't like this woman. And then I pick up the phone and call her, and she's just impossibly nice. She struggles with, you know, work and daycare issues. she's, you know, a lot of times a single mom because she's in a commuter marriage. I related completely to this woman, and here I had almost written her off as someone based on nothing more than knowing that she was an astronaut. You know, now take that to other levels where there's divisiveness because of skin color or around issues such as whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or pro-family or pro-choice. You know, we instantly label people, not necessarily intentionally or maliciously, but we do. And when you get to know who she is and the complexity, which is your word, which is so good, behind that, then she's no longer just an issue or a stereotype or a profession. She's a real person that we don't necessarily have to agree with, but I do think that this fosters a greater way to communicate with her, to find points of connection, and of course also to like somebody.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of the astronaut. I'm thinking she's dealing with both diapers and robotic arm training.
Well, I know, and she was also figuring out ways to make sure that the whole awfulness with the space shuttle never happened again.
Yeah.
You know, so she goes from that as being her work day to, like you said, wanting to make sure that she arrives at daycare right at 5, because anyone who's had a kid in daycare knows you get charged for every minute after you pick them up, you know, when you pick them up after 5. And so talk about a big, you know, span of things to deal with during a day. But again, really optimistic, fun, hectic, you know, overwhelmed a bit, this woman is, but just upbeat and getting a lot out of life.
Yeah. Another one of the women who comes to mind immediately in terms of a complex life is a woman by the name of Crystal Wilkinson.
Right.
And she's about to become a resident of Bloomington, Indiana when this is written. Her heart, however, is in Kentucky. And she's got 2 teenage girls and a new job and moving ahead of her. And speaking of things you might assume about somebody like Crystal Wilkinson, she's a writer. You might make all kinds of assumptions, but she's a really interesting, complex woman as well.
Oh, she is. Well, you know, first of all, she is a fiction writer. First and foremost. So by definition, you know, we writers are neurotic anyway. And then on top of it, she has these teenage girls that are twins dealing with the reality that they're going to be moving. And that means also leaving their first boyfriends. And so the girls are obsessed with it, these boys. Crystal's obsessed with them being obsessed with the boys. Crystal's trying herself to deal with the reality of moving when she doesn't want to leave her hometown. And she's got a new job, a very good job, which is bringing her to this new home in Indiana. But so she's dealing with all that. And, of course, the whole goodbye scene over and over again that she's having to go through with her women friends. She's found herself so overwhelmed by all this, she can barely even pack a box and ends up spending that day socializing a little bit, but also just watching movies. And who can't relate to that paralysis? And in a way, Crystal, clearly from the book, from her achievements, she's a very capable woman. But, boy, who can't relate to, you know, one of those days where you just can't get going.
Yeah, and she's worrying about, too, you know, she thinks of herself as a country person.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sit well with others who think country is, you know, Hicksville.
There's another example of, you know, here's a label that apparently isn't in vogue right now as a novelist or as a fiction writer. And, you know, it's affecting her professional life, and yet if you get past the label, her writing has won all these accolades. She's a phenomenal writer, actually. But, you know, here's someone dealing with a label on a professional level.
Yeah. So she's got all these labels, which is interesting. You know, I mentioned that in my introduction. You know, I said 493 women responded. They included a folk musician, Roseanne Cash, a resettled refugee, journalists, a wedding planner, this writer, Crystal Wilkinson. But those labels are just, they're such a shorthand.
I know.
Because, you know, with Crystal, you know, I know she's African-American. She thinks of herself as country. She's reared as a Southern Baptist, 2 teenage girls, all kinds of conflicted feelings. She's struggling with, you know, my editor, the publisher, excuse me, you know, isn't so sure about this country thing either. She says, you know, country can be a hard sell at the bookstore. So she's dealing with all kinds of things. And so to really kind of introduce Crystal, just think of all the things that you'd like to say. And it's so too for, you know, so many.
Oh, I know. So it's an irony because the whole mission of the book, or one of the many missions, is to overcome these categories, these labels that we are assigned or that society assigns them. And they're not necessarily inaccurate or bad, but they're so reductive. And yet, to talk about the participants or the contributors, I still fall short. I don't know how else do I say, well, we have a rodeo rider, and we have a crime reporter, and we have a madam in a brothel, and, you know, and so here I am almost undermining my own mission. But, you know, that's where you get in a good plug for the book. Read the book, because then you see what the point of the book is.
Yeah. Joni, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, no, I was just going to say that, you know, that nobody is just their labels. We are all, in very many surprising ways, so much more than our labels.
Joni Cole is our guest this afternoon. She's one of the editors of This Day in the Life, Diaries from Women Across America. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you can join us with questions or comments. Have you ever kept a day diary? What is your life like, whether you're a woman or a man? How do these themes that we've been talking about this afternoon resonate with you? You can join the conversation with a telephone call this afternoon. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Did anyone wonder if they could do this without being really self-conscious about it? What kind of tips can you share for listeners this afternoon who might think, you know, maybe I should try that?
Oh, I'd love for people to do day diaries for themselves. It's just a one-day commitment, but there are, in fact, a few tips that are helpful. One is don't worry about it. This is, you know, going into it, you might feel self-conscious, but if you write in the moment, you keep a pad next to you, or perhaps you're more comfortable on the computer and you're near one all day. If you write throughout the day when those thoughts occur to you and you just jot them down as they come into your head, all self-consciousness, all self-censorship will disappear. And it really becomes something that is almost second nature. It's really not meant to be writerly. You're not to try to be profound. Just put down at that moment what you're thinking and feeling and doing, and you'll be amazed, though, how much insight and how many profound things do emerge. But you don't have to stack the deck. You don't have to try to enforce it or impose it on the day diary. And there's a time component, so when you are doing something, glance at the clock and put the time component down, and then add a little bit of reflection around it, or just, you know, whatever's going on in your head at that moment.
Hmm.
It's a very simple exercise, unless you get in your own way.
Yeah. Well, what's the most unusual or unorthodox career that a contributor had? Maybe you've mentioned the brothel manager.
Yeah, Lorraine, that was unorthodox to me.
Lorraine Harper, tell us about her.
Oh, she's so fun. And again, perfectly exemplifies, you know, whatever preconceptions we have about a madam in a brothel, she, I think, just busts the myth wide open. This is a legal brothel, by the way.
Right.
We did it in Nevada. So there are not too many of those in Vermont, so I had to go to Nevada. But she's a close-knit family. Her husband is a retired police officer. First, before taking the job, she used to be in casino management for years and years before taking this job as the madam in the brothel. She talked to her family and her kids, and, of course, her teenage son thought this was the coolest thing on earth. And her daughter asked her, well, what are you going to be doing there? I think it gave her pause at first. She's one of the few madams that was not a working girl before she earned this position. But what was really surprising, this was a good on-the-job day diary, because, of course, she's got a huge event that she's preparing for. The whole town of Pahrump, they're going to have a party for, which is where the brothel is, right outside of Las Vegas. And so a huge party, well over a couple thousand guests. And so her day is spent getting ready for this party, also interviewing new working girls, setting up tours for everyone from the Red Hat Society. I was very surprised that they hold their keys there to the Shriners. You know, and so at the same time, because a day diary is so intimate and because a day diary is really showing versus telling, it's almost like we're on these tours, too, going into, you know, the Sultan's suite and, you know, the S&M room and the girls' bedrooms and the computer room and the dining hall. And so you really are with her the whole day, and it's fascinating how much of a businesswoman she has to be so good at her job. And also it's fascinating to just see how a brothel runs. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. I guess there is a little bit of the voyeuristic thing going on here, isn't there?
Oh, there's no denying. I mean, you know, people often ask, what are you trying to achieve with this book? And, you know, some of it is just plain, well, let's satisfy our curiosity. You know, what is a day in the life of a crime reporter like? Or Roseanne Cash, what's her day like? So there's wonderful themes, wonderful issues that come out, wonderful insights into gender and culture. But, you know, first and foremost, this book is entertaining. And, you know, people use the word captivating a lot in the reviews. And, of course, I love that. But I feel it's true.
Yeah. Well, you got a very nice review from Library Journal.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
They said the results are fantastically complex and entertaining, heartwarming, and empathetic glimpse into many lives.
Yeah, that's, of course, just a lovely review. And we've got another really good review in Publishers Weekly, which is the trade journal for, you know, the publishing industry, and also a really, really great review in People Magazine that said, you know, this is one day you'll wish would go on forever. And what I love about it is it does speak to the multifaceted value of sharing day diaries like this, that there's an academic component that, you know, you can get insights into gender and culture. There's, you know, as People Magazine said, there's this entertainment factor, there's this captivating factor that all two of those three reviews talked about. So I love that it reaches across and brings people to this issue in whatever way they want to come to it.
Yeah. It's meant for, you know, lay readers, popular, you know, readers of popular books. But at the same time, I wonder, could this later on down the line, 20, 30, 40 years from now, these kinds of writings, could they be useful for academics?
It's funny because I'm not an academic, and so I always used to hesitate to say yes or no. But at this point, we've gotten so much feedback, and I've been invited to do talks at enough universities at this point that I see there is real sociology here that will only grow with each, you know, installment of the series, with each new volume. And there are insights into how, you know, everything from just our culture affects women's daily lives to the headlines. I loved in the first book, this was so fascinating. The sniper in the Beltway area was on the loose still when we did the first book, and when women chronicled their day diaries.
Uh-huh.
And we had all read these horrific headlines about women and men, of course, terrified to drop their kids off at school because, you know, their schools were in lockdown. Remember people zigzagging down sidewalks, afraid to get gasoline at the gas stations, or, you know, wanting to not walk in a straight line in case they would be targets. When you see people actually doing this in their day diaries, which many of them were from that part of the country during the first book, that I really understood what it must mean to these mothers to drive up to that school and have to let their kid off at a lockdown school and hope that they made it to the door. You know, when I see them zigzagging down the street, you know, because they're reporting it in their day diary, I get, you know, we might have thought that was silly in retrospect or whatever, but I get the fear that motivated that. It was amazing when you can see some national event like the sniper situation and how what it really means to people.
Yeah. Well, I'm also thinking now of women who, in the course of their work, find themselves either making headlines or they might appear in the headlines because they're doing work that hopefully they're getting hazard pay for. I'm thinking of Brenda Berkman, who's the captain of Engine 239 in Brooklyn. And also there's a Reuters foreign correspondent working in Istanbul. Tell us a little bit about these two women.
Right. Well, one is a firefighter, as you said, in the New York Fire Department. She's actually the first female firefighter and had to issue a lawsuit in order to earn that privilege. And she's phenomenal at her job. And the other one is a foreign correspondent. She was serving in Turkey, still is, in Istanbul, Turkey. And the day that these women created their day diaries, for example, the NATO conference with President Bush in Turkey that day was going on. So for the foreign correspondent, she had a rather unusual day, a violent day. She actually got tear gassed. She was in the middle of a riot because people were protesting the NATO summit being in Turkey. So her day was full of danger and actual real-life assault. So that was interesting to be privy not only to that day, but to the type of woman who does this kind of job. And yet, you know, while she's so brave and I think so accomplished and just amazing to me. At the same time, you know, she gets a stain on her sweater, I think, that day, and she's all worried about, oh, great, just what I need, you know, I'm not going to look so good, you know, and she's worried about her cat, and she's got to go shopping for toilet paper, and, you know, juxtapose that with her filing the story about getting tear gassed. So that's, you know, a typical day in the life, I guess, of a foreign correspondent. And Brenda's the same way. Brenda Berkman in the fire department in Brooklyn. She's goes out to all these calls, and geez, a day in the life.
Yeah, she doesn't know what her day is going to be like from day to day.
No, it's amazing. And, you know, they always have to be a bit on, you know, even when they're sleeping in the firehouse, you got to be sort of ready to go when that call comes in. And that, you know, I really got what that meant by sharing Brenda's day diary. You know, but even little revelations, like one of the most dangerous things of her job is when the fire trucks try to pull out and traffic won't stop, and, you know, despite the lights blazing and the sirens going. And, you know, that even gave me that sense of, geez, how a fire truck actually gets out into traffic in New York City. It was interesting to me that people won't stop very much and how that's one of the more dangerous aspects of the job.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, and also some really mundane stuff, like somebody who's, you know, been on quite the bender, and she really cares for this individual, even though, you know, the person has got some problems.
Yeah, she seems to me, you know, and I know her from her day diary, so no more than any other readers know her, but she's a very serious, very motivated woman who does seem to care deeply about other people.
Yeah. Any stories of coping that you came across? Somebody coping with disappointment and how they were coming through a difficult moment?
Well, the most obvious one, there's tons and tons of those stories. The most obvious one is a woman who is a college counselor, but she's on family medical leave, and her mother is dying. And so she spends the day at her mother's bedside. Her mother's been very, very ill for the past few weeks, and then we get a little better. So this has been a relentless situation for her, and the mother really is in the last few, maybe hours, maybe days of her life. And, oh, my gosh, the way that that woman copes with her mother's restlessness and anxiety, and she's up and down and pulling at her buttons, and, you know, the demands that her mother's making, and you know, her mother won't eat, and then she will eat, and she won't eat. I just found that day diary phenomenal, both in how it captured the relentlessness and the sadness of that situation. And yet at the same time, this woman, Roberta Blaine is her name, you know, she ends her day diary very similar to the way Amanda, whose day diary you read at the beginning of the interview, ends her day, which is, you know, thank goodness I'm alive. There's just so much to live for. And she's looking at the stars outside when she finally gets back to her house at, I don't know, some late, late hour. And, wow, that I just feel so moved that she can maintain that kind of sense of appreciation of life after that kind of day.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that's one of the more extreme examples. But we have people also dealing with men that won't call back, you know, and they really want that phone to ring, or idiotic bosses, or their own, you know, mistakes.
Or great appreciations for husbands.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. One thing that did not pan out in this book, which is just great, is there's a lot of cliches or a lot of assumptions that we might make about our gender, that there'd be a lot of men bashing in a book like this, that this book would give people license to, you know, really rip apart the opposite sex. Very little. There's a lot of humor at men's expense here, and playful humor, you know, as there always is in any relationship. But there's no men bashing. Many of the cliches, there's very little whining, you know, which is, I think, maybe another cliche or assumption people make about women. And I don't think that was our selection process. It just wasn't there.
Yeah. We have to wrap up here. I thought I'd read one more entry, if it's okay with you.
I'd love it.
This is from a 42-year-old mom who's the owner of Funky Designs. It's 10:20 p.m. Her name is Charlie Haversat, and here's her entry. Trying to explain the theory of evolution to a 4-year-old is a tough one, but I give it another whirl. It's hard to talk seriously to someone wearing SpongeBob underwear and arranging stuffed babies, all named Frank, on his bed. Theo is listening, though, and fills in the gaps as I forget them. I realize something has been lost in the translation because he asks, "When I get to be as old as you, will I be a monkey?"
That's perfect.
Yeah, that's where we'll leave it. I wanted to leave with a nice thought. 10:20 p.m. June 29th, 2004. Joni, thank you very much for joining us.
This is my pleasure, Celeste.
Joni Cole, one of the editors of This Day in the Life, Diaries from Women Across America.